Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Birmingham, Michigan, earned a BA in broadcast communications from Western Michigan University. From 1992 to 94, she was a traffic reporter and sports anchor in Chicago. And from 94 to 97, she was a sports reporter co-host at WDFN Sports Radio 1130 with our own Kenny Brown. Since 1995, she's been a sports reporter for WJBK Fox 2 Detroit. A two-time Emmy Award winner, she's affectionately known as The Hammer. Her name, Jennifer Hammond. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're with a legend.
I'm going to cry.
The Hammer,
I'm gonna
Jennifer
cry.
Hammond. Welcome. What an honor to have you.
Oh, my goodness. It is an honor to be here. Truly, I am getting very emotional by you singing my praises the way you have. I listen to my resume and I think, did I do all that?
Well, let's get more emotional. Let's go back to your childhood growing up and your mom and your dad.
Oh, wow. We're going way back. So I can share with you a very cute little story. So my parents, I was born in Lake Forest, Illinois, suburb of Chicago, actually the home of the Chicago Bears.
Very wealthy.
No, actually, I always love to say we were on the other side of the tracks in Lake Forest in a cute little bungalow. My parents were divorced when I was quite young. So I would go back and forth on weekends to my dad's. And my dad was like kind of a techie guy. He had a cassette deck on his kitchen counter. And we would sit, my sister and I would sit, and we would talk into the cassette deck and make radio shows while dinner was cooking. And I kid you not, I found a cassette tape when my father passed away in 1986 of me saying, "Hello, sports fans." And there's actually a picture I have on my social media of me as a very young girl, maybe 5 years old, holding that microphone in my hand. So I feel like this was always my calling, and whether or not my dad knew that, saw that, he nurtured it. And then when I was 10 years old, my mom remarried, and we moved to Birmingham, Michigan, and I became a Detroiter.
You know, Dick Enberg had that "oh my" that he used for decades.
Yeah.
And you've got this "hello sports fans" that you've used
"hello,
for decades."
Hello sports fans, right? It's so crazy, and it really does remind me that there must have been, you know, a little girl in there that knew she was dreaming big.
All right, you're at Seaholm Home High School, Birmingham.
Yes.
And your first on-camera experience.
It was second hour Mr. Terrence television production class, and one of my dearest friends, Beth Jones, and I were in that class together. And every day we would sit at the anchor desk and we would read, I think it was called WSTB. That's too trite. STB or something like Seaholm Television Broadcast. And we would do the morning announcements and they would be shuttled up to the office and played in the recorder and they'd be on the television screens throughout the building. So that was really my first on-camera experience at Seaholm High School. And I used to run around telling people, Jack, that I wanted to be Phyllis George. Because at a very young age, when I was probably in junior high school, which is now traditionally middle school, I was telling people that, or I was actually watching Monday Night Football and typing up lineups and sitting at the typewriter watching TV. It was my own little mini press box in my home. And sometimes my stepdad would watch with me, but other times my parents would go up to bed and I would just be in there by myself. My sisters did not love sports. So I just was gravitating to mostly the NFL. But I really started to fall in love with it, with all of the storytelling from the wide world of sports, you know, the thrill of victory.
The thrill of victory.
Jim McKay.
And the agony of defeat.
And the agony of defeat. And it just, it hooked me. It hooked me.
Speaking of gravitating, you got a BA in communications, broadcast communications from Western Michigan University. And then you moved to Chicago.
Yeah. Let me back up, though, just a titch on the Western Michigan story, because I had an awesome experience at Western Michigan. When I arrived in Kalamazoo in the fall of 83, I found a work-study program. So it was through like the student aid department. There were certain jobs listed and it said sports information department, editor, producer, reporter. And I thought, oh my goodness, there's sports and this is speaking to me. So I went in and I sat down and it was an office full of men. And I told them that I wanted to be Phyllis George and I wanted to do sports and I wanted to work for their department. And they hired me. And my first interview, my very first interview ever, was with a coach by the name of Jack Harbaugh. And he was tremendous to me, a little scary and gruff, but it was great. And John Offerdahl was a linebacker for the Broncos then, who, of course, went on to great fame with the Miami Dolphins. And it really set the stage for me. It was incredible. And then from there, I also got a job at a radio station in Kalamazoo as a Cubs monitor, basically just playing the carts, the commercials, and writing down the time on the logs. And I did that for Bears football, Cubs baseball, Kalamazoo college basketball and football because, you know, in Kalamazoo, we're right between Chicago and Detroit. So here I was in the middle of my two homes, my birthplace and where I was raised, working on my sports career. And then at that point is when I decided I want to go to the big city. I want to go back to Chicago when I graduated.
A lot of construction in Detroit right now.
Oh, gosh.
So, all right, you were a traffic reporter.
I was a traffic reporter. And it's funny, you can take the girl out of traffic, but you can't take the traffic out of the girl. I still, when I'm driving on the freeway and I see an accident or some kind of situation, I will sometimes call up local radio stations and report accidents if there's no one on the scene. And if there's a big backup, I'll do that. I absolutely loved it. And it's interesting, when I talk to young kids, students, male and female, I always tell them that you don't always have to take the direct path. It's not like you're going to go right into TV from college. And I'm so happy and grateful for the experiences that I had when I was working as a traffic reporter. And it wasn't ultimately my goal, but I put in everything I had to be the best traffic reporter I could. And I'll tell you, those were some enjoyable years in Chicago, and they ultimately opened doors for me.
We're talking to Jennifer Hammond. In 2024, she was named the Michigan Sportscaster of the Year by the National Sports Media Association.
First female.
Unbelievable.
It took 30 years.
Unbelievable.
I'm grateful for it because I think at this point in time in my career, I think I love it more than ever because I dreamed it and it happened and it's still happening. Most people in this career, as you know, they kind of get chewed up and spit out. I've seen it happen to a lot of friends of mine. And it was just tremendous to receive that honor after all the work, time, energy, passion I have poured into my career at Fox 2.
Phyllis George is looking down, clapping for you right now.
I'm clapping for her. And another woman, if I could give a little prop to someone who definitely helped steer me in the direction and gave me encouragement when I needed it. Because in the 80s and 90s, there weren't a lot of women doing it, and there weren't a lot of women extending a hand to other women. I'm not sure if you all are familiar with this concept, but it doesn't always work that way for women in any business, in my opinion. And Pam Oliver, who worked at Fox, was at WDFN doing a guest spot with Rob Parker and Stoney one day. And I just handed her my tape from Chicago and I said, I really admire your work and I'd appreciate if you could give me any tidbits, feedback, point me in the right direction. And this was before cell phones and email, I believe. And she, well, maybe it was email. 94, did we have email? I'm not even sure. But she reached out to me and said, girlfriend, all I can say is you shouldn't be in radio.
And the rest is history.
And the rest is history.
I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Jennifer Hammond. Other than Pam Oliver, another female angel that God brought in your life was Lorna Gladstone.
Lorna Gladstone. So the story of Lorna Gladstone, she was in Chicago. She worked at WGN Radio as a program director or producer something. She was a brilliant radio woman. And she was familiar with my work in Chicago. She was coming to Detroit to kick off WDFN, the first all-sports radio station, AM 1130, in the summer of 94. I applied for the position through my agent, who was a friend of Lorna's. And my agent assured me I would have an interview. A woman talking sports? Absolutely. We'll get you in there. Wait. Don't get the interview. Finally, I say to my agent, what's going on? You know, why doesn't she want to talk to me? And she's like, oh, I guess they filled all their positions. So I thought, well, that's really strange. Why would she not even talk to me? So one weekend, I was home from Chicago visiting my mother, and I just called out of the blue to Lorna unsolicited and said, "Hello, Lorna Gladstone, Jennifer Hammond. I'm home this weekend in Detroit visiting my mom, and I was just wondering if I could come meet with you. I felt badly that I got passed up on the interview." She said, "What do you mean you're home?" And I said, "I'm from Detroit." And so she said, "How soon can you be here?" And I went to the mall, I bought a suit, and she scolded me for that. She's like, "You didn't need to get a suit." But I drove down to WDFN, sat in this tiny little office below ground without a beautiful view with Art Regner and Greg Henson and Lorna. And we talked about Bo and Woody and the Michigan versus Ohio State battles. And I told them my story of being a young kid watching football and wanting to be Phyllis George. And Lorna Gladstone hired me on the spot.
All right. November of 1997, Fox 2 gave you a full-time job in the sports department as the number three.
Yeah. So the great story about Fox 2 is that it was another woman, an amazing woman who is a dear friend of mine, Dana McDaniel. And she worked with me in Chicago at CLTV. So she was very familiar with my ad-libbing skills, my television skills, what I did as a traffic reporter and a sports reporter on the desk in the morning at CLTV. She came back to Detroit when CBS, when Fox bought up all of the CBS and other affiliates around the country in the NFC cities to kick off their NFL coverage. She got in there because she was very technically savvy. She's a brilliant woman, and not many women thrive on the technical side in television, as I've noticed in my years. And she was working in the production side, and she asked me if, as I traveled for the radio station on the Lions games, if I would just do a little quick hit on camera with their photographer for the Lions pregame show. Hence, the Lions pregame show on Fox 2 was born in 1995 or 6, I want to say. Back then, I was doing it with Frank Malicote at first, and then it was Mark Wilson, Eric Hipple, Tom Kowalski, and it really was incredible. And then finally, I kept doing part-time freelance stuff for them. By June of 97, when the Wings won the Stanley Cup, and I was part of their parade coverage, Dana had asked me, "Hey, can we put you along Woodward across from the Fox Theater, and you'll get all the interviews with the players in their cars?" And one piece of advice that Lorna Gladstone gave me that was amazing, she said, "As a woman, you have great power. You can befriend their wives and girlfriends." And then the players, if they see that, you know, you're friendly. And it wasn't forced either. I mean, these were great, nice people, people who loved Detroit, people who eventually my kids went to school with some of their kids. And so I was doing the parade coverage and I was knocking it out of the park. And Neil Goldstein, who was the program director at the time at Fox 2, sat in an office with Dana McDaniel watching the Stanley Cup coverage in 97 and said, who's that girl who doesn't work for us full time that's running our show?" And Dana said, "That's Jen. Isn't she great?" And he said, "Yeah, hire her."
All right, let's jump to January 2024.
Mm.
What a phenomenal month for Michigan sports fans.
First, unbelievable.
The U of M National Football Champions.
It was so cool. It was fun because we were there for a couple of the semifinal games in the years prior. And you just had a sense they weren't ready yet in those games. But this year, it was different. They were on a mission, and it went all the way back to, I think, when J.J. McCarthy stood on the field. Boy, was that in Phoenix? And watched the other team celebrate. And he just said, "We'll be back." And I'll be darned if they didn't get there. It was incredible. What a great team of kids. And I covered Lloyd Carr's national championship team out at the Rose Bowl in 97. Yeah. And that was just phenomenal. It was, I think, actually January 1st of 98. And it was great. And to see that program come full circle like that, and really great teams. There were a lot of qualities in those teams, I think, that were very similar.
All right. Speaking of full circle, January 14th, 2024, after 32 years, the Lions win their first playoff game.
Please. I cried. And I could cry again just thinking about it. For those fans, it was the most amazing thing. I think the only other thing that I had seen that was comparable was when Steve Yzerman hoisted the cup over his head in 97. There was a gentleman standing behind me in the Joe, just tears streaming down his face. And it's so amazing that I've covered that team for so long and never saw what they really could be. The fans of Detroit are incredible. They've shown me as much in defeat as they have in victory, because when they were 0-16, there were still people going on the road. We would see them in the airports, on the flights, going to cover this team. But this year was just magical. And on the road, Jack, I've never seen anything like it, the Sea of Honolulu Blue. was really cool.
Speaking of on the road, the NFC Championship game.
Yeah, that one was hard, huh? I think the Super Bowl was harder. So we were so mired in work. Fox 2 does an amazing job. We sent a lot of people, talented people, photographers, reporters. Dan Miller was there. And I remember going into the radio booth with Dan Miller at halftime, and I was like, I can't believe what I'm seeing. And he said, there's still another half. He was very measured, and it almost jarred me because he's typically more of a fan than I am. Because as a reporter over the year, you just cannot allow yourself to get tangled up in the highs and the lows. Otherwise, you know, I'd be a wreck. But he spoke some logic, and I didn't really want to hear it. And then, boy, as the wheels fell off, that was tough. And that Monday we were traveling back, we flew, we worked 24 hours. So I was just kind of numb at that point. But then I woke up Tuesday morning, honestly, Jack, I was sobbing. I was in so much pain for those players and the fans and all of the work that they put in. But within an hour, we found out that Ben Johnson was coming back, and it felt different again. It feels like the possibility, you know, possibility is there. It's so hard to get to that point in any sport.
You talk about the highs and the lows and coming full circle. Kenny Brown.
Oh, love Kenny.
And you carried him at fan.
He used to be a caller. He was a caller in the early days, and he would do his comedy act on the air. KB is great.
All right. Let's go back to December 27th, 1996, and the Lions fire Wayne Fonts.
The big buck. The big buck. I loved Wayne Fonts. He actually put me a little bit on the map in Detroit early on in my radio career when I asked them about their aggressive play and how they were going to play against the Buffalo Bills. And I said, are you going to go balls out? And he stopped the interview right then and there. And he turned all the TV cameras, Don Shane, and all the TV cameras on me. And he said, she said it. I didn't. She said it. And Wayne was such a character. And he was such a great man. And I really loved him because he treated me so fairly. And he was very open and honest with me. And he was the first NFL coach I ever covered, really. And when he was fired, I just so desperately wanted to get that story. I chased him home in my car, all the way home. Frank Novak was driving him. And he got out of the car. And he had tears running down his face. And he said, not now, Jenny.
All right, let's go to January 27th, 2003. After two seasons, 5 wins, 27 losses, Marty Mornedwick.
He invited us in his home. Stood on his front porch, on his front steps, I believe in Plymouth he might have lived, and held a press conference for all of the media that was there and talked to us. His wife Lindsay invited us in. I loved Marty as a guy, as a person. He was not the right fit for this team. He was not a great head coach, obviously, as the numbers would bear, but he was such a lovely human being. And an even funnier story, Jack, is the week that he was hired, I was 9 months pregnant, ready to give birth to my son Riley, and in 2001, and we were waiting outside of the Silverdome for hours on end, and finally Matt Millen came out and said, I'm going to talk to you and you all thank Jen because I'm not going to make her stay here any longer pregnant. I was trying to order a pizza down the ramp at the Silverdome. I was literally due to give a C-section on Monday, and this was, you know, the week before. And then they had the Marty Mornedwick press conference when I was about to have a baby. So that's how I remember Marty fondly. But great guy, great family.
We're talking to Jennifer Hammond. When we come back, we're going to go back a couple of weeks, April 25th, 2024. And I'm Jack Rasulin, and this is Anything Is Possible on 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Rasula, and we're Jennifer Hammond. Jennifer, let's go back. April 25th through the 27th, 2024.
It's funny. You say all these dates, and I'm like, wait, what happened that day? Oh, it was last Thursday. It was the NFL draft. My goodness, Detroit, did you shine? It was so cool. I was just overwhelmed, had no idea what to expect. I was downtown in Campus Martius working on the fourth floor at the CompuWare Press Center building. And I got down there a little bit early in the day so I could walk the streets and just see the people. And the way our city shines And the Lions fans, again, this is to my point of in January, the way the team, and even really all season long in 2023, and it started at the end of 2022 with that Green Bay game on the road at Lambeau when they won the last regular season game, and they didn't even get in the playoffs, but they celebrated as if they were going somewhere. And they were. They were going to the NFC Championship game the following year. But Detroit sports fans are incredible, and I honestly believe that is why I've been so successful. When someone tells me that they enjoy our pregame show or they love watching Fox or we're their favorite station, I thank them profusely, because without viewers and committed sports fans that truly love us and want to watch us and engage with us, we're nothing. And I love that about Detroit. I've never fit better in a city with an attitude and a passion and a mentality than I feel connected with Detroit right now.
And we love you.
Oh, thank you.
Speaking of love.
Okay.
Dan Campbell.
Dan Campbell. All the love in the world for Dan Campbell. That guy's incredible. And it's funny, when he was a player, he was so hardworking, nose down, soft-spoken. He wasn't here long, but he just was, he was kind of a dude. You got that sense when he was here, he was kind of a dude. And when he came back as the coach, when he was hired, I didn't know what to think. I was a little nervous because first-time coach, first-time GM, again, that hasn't been successful in the recipe in Detroit in the past. So there was some tentative, you know, trepidation there, I should say. The things that Dan Campbell says, the honesty that with which he speaks, and the passion with which he works is just unmatched. And Brad Holmes seemed like kind of the quiet guy in the back in the beginning, but when you see the videos of him in the draft room and the video of him getting on the elevator after they won that playoff game, and I love that guy. And I like to share the story too. He bought me a bourbon in Green Bay in the hotel lobby, and I just thought, what a nice guy. And he just asked me about myself, you know, where I was from, what I've been doing, how long I've done this. And he's like, so you've seen a lot? And I'm like, oh yeah. And the fans of Detroit, when you give it to them, they're going to love you. And it's really an incredible tandem. And all praise to Sheila, man. She's yes. The one that did this, that hired them, got Chris Spielman in there. Mike Disner is incredible. There is such a strong staff of connected, like-minded, and maybe not even totally like-minded, because everyone has a different way of doing things, saying things, presenting the information, but they connect and they collaborate. And what they're building here is special. And it's so much fun to watch. And I don't think I would appreciate it as much had I not seen the depths of despair that this city had been through with their teams. I truly believe all of the bad things make the good times even better.
We mentioned it earlier, January 2024. You're named the Michigan Sportscaster of the Year by the National Sports Media Association, first female. When you put your head on the pillow that night, Jennifer, what'd you think?
So I was proud. I didn't want to get too wrapped up in it because I had been nominated before and lost, and it didn't change me, didn't change my world. So, you know, it's that mentality that you hear a lot from athletes. When people say good things, don't believe it all. When people say bad things, you can't believe it all. So I try to stay in the middle with it. But I'm not going to lie, it was really special, especially to be named, to receive that award for the first time as a woman, to be the first woman, I should say, named to that award was really cool, because I've worked at this for a really long time, and I never thought my dream wouldn't come true. I pushed and pushed. I don't want to say it came easy, but it was always there for me because I did the right things. I just kept my head down, just kept working, told my story, made sure that I got the experience, and every piece of experience helped me. Being a traffic reporter helped me. Answering phones at WDFN helped me. Going to, you know, Western Michigan football games in the press box when I was a sophomore in college helped me. So a lot of people along the way helped pave this road for me. And so for any awards, accolades I get, it's really a testament to the people who supported me and gave me a chance. And Dan Miller is one of those. I mean, Dan Miller kept me. He inherited me when he came to Detroit. And he worked with me and he saw what I could do and what different element, because our sports department really is kind of a mod squad. You know, it's Dan Miller, Woody Woodruff, myself, and we all have very different styles, tendencies, work habits. And it's interesting how we just continue to thrive. There are no other sports departments in the country where three main anchor on-air people have been together for 20 plus years. It just, it doesn't happen. So it's, I'm most proud of that.
Speaking of long careers, our Tigers are in their 124th season.
Wow. Wojo covered the first season. Yeah, I love baseball. Baseball is actually how I'm going to spend my Mother's Day with my children and six of my girlfriends and their kids. We bought tickets and we're all going to the game tomorrow and we're going to be sitting outside in the sun drinking a beer. I always put my first peanut in the shell on top of my beer to get the beer nice and salty. That's my tradition. My kids laugh at me. But it's there's nothing like being at the ballpark. And 2006 and 2012 showed us what this city is like when that team is clicking. And the roar of the fans. There's something about an outside roar in a round stadium that just carries through the night. The bombs that Maglio Ordóñez hit still are among my favorite. Jim Leland will always be my favorite manager coach of any team to cover. He was hardest on me, and he also taught me the most. And I love him the most for that.
So, he gets into the Baseball Hall of Fame in a couple of months.
So I hope I can be there. I really am gonna push hard for that trip for our station because he's an incredible human being. And he's emotional too, you know? And I think that's what I love about Dan Campbell. Very tough, very gritty, but he also isn't afraid to cry. And cry tears of joy and pain. And I think that's an important element and concept for people in all walks of life.
Baseball started in 1869. There's only been seven men who have hit 500 home runs and 3,000 hits.
I covered one of them.
The latest being Miggy.
What a guy. Gosh.
Al Kaline told me once, Jack, he's the best right-handed hitter I ever saw in my life.
Yeah, and boy, let's talk about Al Kaline. Was he a gentleman among gentlemen? I loved Al Kaline. I felt so privileged and honored that he even knew my name, that he'd hug me and say, "There she is." What a great man Al Kaline was. What a great Tiger. Miggy is an enigma because there were many days he did not want to talk to the media and he didn't like us. And he let it be known. But he granted me probably one of the greatest interviews of my career at his final spring training. I was pushing him to talk to us because we were only down there. My photographer, Jeff Holloway, and I were down there for 3 days. And he said he wasn't going to talk until Monday. Because he had to get his hair fixed. He was getting his hair either braided or unbraided something. And I said, "Okay, well, I'm going to leave Monday. I won't be here. And I'd really like to get this interview with you." And we had been down there every spring training for decades. So about half hour after the workout was getting ready to wrap up outside on the backfields at Joker March, and he called me over and he said, "You want to do the interview? Come sit down." So I sat with him on the bench in the dugout at one of the backfields, and I just get my photographer, come on. And he gave us a one-on-one, and it was a beautiful thing. And he was happy, gentle, kind. You know, he was always for the most part very good to me.
All right, you mentioned Kaline, a gentleman, a great man. Another gentleman, great man, Ernie Harwell.
I have a picture on my desk at work. Now you're going to really make me cry, of Ernie at a Lions game. And I wish I knew the date. I'll have to ask Kenny Brown. He knows all the dates. And Ernie has his hands on my shoulders, and he's saying something so poignant to me. And it's funny. I don't remember when it was or what he said, but I know how it made me feel. And that photo that Dan Mears from the Detroit News snapped and sent to me, I thank him for that, really just conjures up that emotion of what an uncommon gentleman Ernie Harwell was. Boy, was he Detroit. Would he love the city right now, Jack? He would just be over the moon. And I think he's watching, he and Lulu, and such a cool guy. I'm so blessed that I feel like I've lived at just the right time to meet all of these amazing people. Never again will we see the likes of an Al Kaline, Ernie Harwell, Barry Sanders, Miguel Cabrera, Steve Eiserman playing and
Danny
now as a GM.
Dickerson just celebrated 25 years.
Isn't that crazy? When I saw that with the bobblehead, I thought, how has it been that long?
Ernie Harwell had a lot of lines. One was, "Whenever you have a choice of being right or kind, always choose kind."
I'm going to use that.
And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything is Possible on 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist, who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohom.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible, and we're talking to the Hammer, Jennifer Hammer. We've listened to her since 1995 on Fox 2 Detroit. President Woodrow Wilson, in 1914, made the official announcement proclaiming Mother's Day as a national holiday that was to be held each year on the second Sunday of May, tomorrow. Webster defines mother as a woman who conceives, gives birth to, or raises and nurtures a child. You've been a lot of things, world class at a lot of things. Arguably, the most important thing is you've been mom to Riley, Morgan, and Sydney.
I am.
What's a mom, Jennifer?
What is a mom? Emotional. I wear my heart on my sleeve. I try to keep figuring that out every day. I think a mother is someone who learns with their children as they grow. A friend of mine once said, you are only as happy as your least happy child. And when you start to learn and really understand what that means, it's heavy. It's a responsibility. And I wouldn't change it for the world. And it's so meaningful to me that my children sent me cards on my birthday that said, I was the most amazing, inspirational mother, and how much they love me. And it's not, I mean, it's not, we always will love each other. That's a given. But it's that I've created, just by being myself, a structure and an ambition for them. Because my mom did the same thing for me without knowing. And boy, we had some rocky roads. You know, she was a woman, she was a complicated woman, divorced once to my father. She outlived two other husbands. I was the baby of five. She married a man who had seven children, so I was the baby of 12. She raised me with a toughness. When I was 14 years old, she handed me my Social Security card, said, go get a job today. Don't come home till you do. And I thought, well, good. I'm gonna. You know, I have this challenge and competitive spirit, and that was exactly what I needed. Challenge me to go get a job, and I did. And I came home, and I'm gonna knock on wood. I've been employed every day since.
We're talking to Jennifer Hammond. Jennifer, the whole world can mock you, cheat you, write you off, but your mom will always be there for you. Why so?
Oh, gosh. Well, my mother is no longer with us, but she just always had a way of, even by saying nothing, she always used to do this thing where she would just touch my forehead, you know, if I was upset, and I would just feel better. She was tough love. I'm not going to sugarcoat it, but that made me who I am. I regret nothing of my life, because I wouldn't be sitting in this place as the person I am right now without every single experience, negative and positive, that I've encountered. And she really did. She kind of pushed me in a way that wasn't intentional. I told her I wanted to be Phyllis George and wanted to be a sportscaster. I actually wanted to go to the University of Arizona. I was accepted there. And my sister had gone to college out there about 7 years prior, and she never came home. And my mom said, nope. Can't go. You're not furthest west you're going is Kalamazoo. So when I did go to Kalamazoo, she said, what do you want to major in, business? And I said, no, broadcasting.
We can't talk about Detroit sports without talking about Mr. and Mrs. I.
Mrs. I signed my paychecks at Little Caesar's Pizza. I was an assistant manager there my summers between my junior and senior year in college, or maybe it was my senior year and then my freshman year, my senior year of high school, freshman year of college. And I loved working for Little Caesars Pizza. Three of my sisters did it. They just own the town, don't they? And boy, I loved the way Mr. I operated. I would love to see that happen again with our Tigers. I know it's not always easy in the era of the salary cap, but boy, the Illiches certainly have given a lot. And Marion is, she's a legend.
All right. Mr. I, and now Stevie Y.
Yeah. I always knew Steve was going to come back here to take on the Red Wings job. In 2014 or 15, I remember somebody challenging me on Twitter saying, no, he's got another contract with the Tampa Bay team. And I'm like, no, he's coming back. This is home for him. And I think he's a guy who loves a challenge, and he wants nothing more than to turn the team he played for into a winner as a GM. He likes to set those marks high, and I think this team could get there. They showed us some things this year, but they've certainly got to get a little more scoring and shore some things up. But I trust in Stevie Yzerman as much as I ever have.
You know, in 1986, at age 21, he was named the captain. He served 22 seasons in that capacity. He's the longest-serving captain of any team in North American sports history.
Mm-hmm. He was a gem to cover some days. Much like Mickey, you know, didn't love the media, didn't always see a purpose for us talking to him about every single thing. But he made me a better reporter. Really did. Made me a better reporter. And nowadays, he is always friendly. And, you know, he's still a very serious man. But when you get Stevie laughing, you know that he likes you. It's a good thing. I really believe in him as a general manager. And it's funny how long I've been around that I've now covered these guys that were once upon a time players, even first year players. And now they're the coaches and the GMs, a la Dan Campbell and Steve Yzerman and Brad Ausmus, and I'm sure there'll be more.
As our time winds down, can you give us the call you made as a little five-year-old girl again?
Hello, and I couldn't say my R's. Hello, sports fans.
Jennifer Hammond, thank you for decades of joy, entertainment.
Oh, thank you. I had no idea I'd come in here and cry on the radio today, but I loved it.
Thank you.
I don't need therapy now.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God,
anything is possible.
Believe in yourself.